Yes, kia ora koutou. Kia ora koutou. Na hoki mai ki a koutou, kei te kōrero kōrero a Tamihere. We're lucky enough this evening to be joined by Rika Rosley. Rika's, I like talking to youth advocates, all right? And because they're such a variegated mob. Youth, when we talk youth issues in Aotearoa, it covers such a broad spectrum that you just have this, and it's a dynamic cohort of people, at least from my memory, right? So I'm getting a bit old now. This is why I talk to young people like Rika. But the point is that she does a marvellous job out there, particularly in the south side of town, right, heading towards Hamilton. Anyway, Rika grew up in Waiuku. And as I said to her just off air, that not many people own up to that. But actually, Waiuku is a lovely little town outside of heading. For those of you who don't know it, listeners, it's heading towards the Bombays out of Auckland, and you turn off right up the top of the Bombays, heading towards the top of the Bombays. Waiuku is tucked in over in the west side of the coast over there. It's a beautiful little village, actually. So Rika, I just wanted to ask a question of you in regard to what brought you to be a youth peer support specialist?
Yeah, so my background's all in lived experience. So, you know, I didn't have the easiest time growing up, as I guess many of us can relate to. And back then, I guess it was about 10 years ago now, I was a young person myself, and this sort of role didn't exist in my world. And so I thought, well, why not go out and create it? And so I actually started by blogging back when that was a thing. And I just started openly and really honestly sharing my story in a really raw way that people could relate to. And then that sort of took off. And from there, I ended up getting asked to do a TED Talk, just based around my life stories and the lessons that I learned from that. And it's quite interesting. I didn't know what a TED Talk was at the time. I just sort of said yes to it. But it really kick-started things off for me because it was the first time I'd publicly shared my story before that I was all anonymous. And when you do a TED Talk, apparently everyone wants you to speak at their events and this and that. So I started doing a lot of public speaking, sharing my story. But eventually, I guess I realized that, you know, sharing your story is one thing, you might inspire someone, but if we're not giving our young people practical tools to use in their own lives, we're not really making a change for them. And so from there, I started designing, you know, developing youth wellbeing workshops, and I've been facilitating them ever since and doing a lot of advocacy stuff too.
Yes, look, you've had a, what one would consider to be a harrowing upbringing. So you might care to share that story if you want to, because the reason is that we have a lot of do-gooders come into our communities as well. You know? Yeah. So, and you know what they look like. They're well-intended, but well off the mark. So just understanding your sense of travel from a young person, you know, 14, 15, yeah, would be might help our audience.
Yeah, so I guess I, for me, I come from a childhood where I did experience sexual harm, which unfortunately is quite common in our country. And that was sort of the catalyst for the downward spiral into my teen years and, you know, not having the tools and the support to really cope with that in a healthy way. I ended up working in the adult industry, turning to drugs as a means of coping. I had a early diagnosis with mental illness and, you know, the types of people that I was surrounding myself looking for that support weren't exactly, you know, they didn't have my best interests at heart. So just one thing sort of led to another. And I guess I just sort of got to the breaking point where I decided there's got to be something other than this. And that's I guess, why youth is my focus, is because I feel like they have that chance where there could be that breaking point for them. There could be that turning point where they have that unique opportunity to really turn their lives around. There's so much potential there. And so that's why youth is my focus.
Yeah. Now, look, can I explore with you the way in which mental health is diagnosed? Because it comes with a stigma. Right? Whether we want it or not, and we've got to really unpack the the stigmatization of mental unwellness because it's unfair, but it does come with it. Now, when you were first diagnosed, did you feel like you were being listened to and loved and looked after? Because they immediately often reach for pharmaceuticals. So what was your journey?
My experience in terms of getting into the system and official diagnosis, I think started around 12 years old. And like you say, I was put straight on pharmaceuticals. That was sort of like the route that they took. But alongside that was a lot of intense therapy, which I still use therapy myself. I have nothing against it at all. And I think there's actually stigma with using medication as well. I think everyone should be open to all options. And, you know, like I'm not going to sit here and say that antidepressants are the worst thing in the world, because honestly, there have been times where I've leant on them as a crutch while using therapy at the same time. It's honestly saved my life. So I don't want to stigmatize people who use or don't use them. I think we should be open to all options. But at the time that I was diagnosed as a young child, I didn't have all options available to me. I was just sort of thrust into the system and given whatever I was given. And if I had understood maybe Te Whare Tapa Whā, different ways that I could build resilience within myself, that I didn't have to use medication or, you know, the traditional, I guess, ways that they would deal with a child like me at the time, maybe I could have chosen something else.
Well, I think we've come a fair distance since then. It is estimated that between 35% and 40% of young people, and when I'm talking young people, I'm talking 12 to 20. Although some people use the number 14 to 24 or whatever they want to call it, but I'm using 12 to 20 just for our conversation today. So just using that number, it's estimated that over 40% have anxiety attacks. And this,
honestly, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, and then, well, you know, I was, and then I tried to track was there a causation to this, and I've only read one document, and I want to put it to you, that from 2006, as soon as iPhone went to like and share, they've tracked the incidence of anxiety increasing in youth populations from 2006 on. And that sort of worked for me, if you know what I mean. I don't know. Have you done any thinking about that?
Yeah. So I mean, I don't want to make any assumptions about your age here, but I'm guessing that you didn't grow up with the iPhone.
No, of course not.
So I suppose even in your teenage years, you can remember that time in your life where suddenly there was this pressure to figure out your identity and like your place in the world, right? So imagine having that pressure, and added to it, you have to suddenly formulate this whole other identity, this digital citizenship, like an identity that, unlike our identity in real life, which has the ability to change and transform, and we understand that people change over time, your online identity is permanent and it will come back to bite you. And that is immense pressure to put on a young person who's trying to figure out who they are as a person, let alone who they are online, knowing the impacts of what that online presence means for them forever. And it's crazy when you try and think of it that way. But that is incredible pressure. So it absolutely makes sense.
Yeah, I thought so too, you know, because, and then you got all these fake views of yourself because you have to be part of the hip crowd or whatever the terminology is in your youth language. Hey, the other thing that I wanted to put to you was that, I have a very, very good youth outreach team here, and you've got to have people with one lived experience and approximate age groups, because making that connection, doesn't matter how many degrees you got, but there's this basic humanity of being able to make a connection with a young person, and it often takes people in proximity to do that now. Experience out here in the West, and on that, all I'd just say and ask for an observation from you is, so dynamic is as our youth sector, And I suspect in my day it was too, but the dynamism of it increases because of the digital age in which we're living in. You have to change up your programs to the next cohort of young people coming through, because they just have a totally different dynamic to the last mob. That, and so you build a program that works for this mob, but it mightn't be fit for purpose for the incoming cohort, if you know what I mean. What do you say about the dynamics of shaping responses for youth?
Yeah. So I think you hit the nail on the head there. Like, we need to be using lived experience, current lived experience, to really to co-design these sort of programs and systems and things. Also, one thing that I've been noticing a lot of is that the generational gap is getting smaller and smaller. It's very strange. I mentioned the other day on AM that, you know, when I was growing up, and this isn't that long ago, I could easily relate to people 5 years older than me and 5 years younger than me. We'd still have a lot in common. And it's not the same these days. And that's just changed so fast. And that gap is getting smaller and smaller.
So, yeah. So anyway, if you had a magic wand and you were running the show, what would youth service look like?
Do you know, the funny thing about that is that even if I had that magic wand, I wouldn't take it. And the reason is because I have seen that the higher up you go, the more disconnected from the people you are. And I think that is a huge part of our issue here, is we're lacking that connection. Like, as you're saying with social media, we've created this world where we're more connected than ever. And yet we have the most disconnected generation we've ever seen. So I don't think I would even take that role. I think we need to be focusing on these people who are at that grassroots level. They're in the community. They're with our young people, and just putting all our resources into them. I think connection is what's really missing here, and that needs to be our focus.
You know, when you say connection, work with me on that. How does that play out?
I think just this assumption that we know what our young people want and need is something that we're getting really, really wrong. I think if we're listening to our young people, and if we're putting them in positions where they're part of that decision-making process for themselves at every step of the way, also understanding that our young people actually already hold everything it takes for them to lead successful lives. They just need a little support, whatever that might look like for them. But just really listening to them, not categorizing them, not chucking them all in the same basket. You know, these are people, and they're one of our most precious demographics. They're our future leaders, and I think treating them as individuals with all these unique strengths and talents, and just taking a really human-centered approach to this, that there are incredible leaders within our youth groups. You know, in every high school you'll have that one kid that everyone goes to for support, or when they need advice on something. We've got these little champions everywhere already. Why are we not supporting them?
Yes, now we're coming into the back end of the straight here, finishing this conversation. But I was taken by this, you know, when how you named your baby.
Oh, yeah.
Speak to me. How did you come up with that name?
I don't even know how you know this story. My baby. So I had a dream about him, and I met him in my dream, and he told me his name in the dream, and then. Ages later, once I was pregnant, I was in Whitcalls, and I picked up a baby names book, flicked it open to a random page, and his name was right there. And it's a very unique name, so it was interesting. But it basically means he who will live a vibrant and joyous life. Oh, no, sorry. No, that's my name. Whoops. His name. I got confused there. His name means that he sees the world in a different way, and I think it suits him perfectly. And his middle name's Manaya, because he's my little guardian. So.
Oh, good. And share the name with our listeners.
Oh, his name's Ian Manaya.
Right. Yeah, too much. Oh, anyway, it was a great story. I thought it was a great story. These little snippets tell a lot about a person.
Yeah. I'm definitely raising a little advocate there.
yeah, for sure. So anyway, hey, listen, it's been really grateful having this conversation with you, and wish you all the best and the great mahi you're doing out there on the south side.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay. Kia ora.